Look at the screen.
William Blake's The Great Red Dragon and the woman clothed in the rays of the sun. Do you see?
I know that I'm not smarter than you.
Then how did you catch me?
You had disadvantages.
What disadvantages?
You're insane.
Do you see?
You're so sly. So am I.
Do you see?
You're supposed to be his friend, Jack. Why didn't you leave him alone?
Do you see? Mrs. Leeds, do you see?
Yes.
You want the scent?
Smell yourself.
Do you see?
Just you and me now, sport.
Do you see?
You've seen these films, haven't you, my man?
You owe me all.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Manhunter, a Manhunter podcast. Yes, it's Michael Mann's 1986 adaptation of Thomas Harris's Red Dragon, directed by Michael Mann, written by Michael Mann. And this is the first episode of our series. I'm joined by my dear friend Stu Coote. Hello, Stu.
Hello, great to be back.
Great to have you back. Wouldn't start any series without thinking of trying to get you along to come and have some fun and play along. And when I was doing the scenes of the entire series, I remember distinctly, it had to be like one of the later episodes of One Hit Minute where you were like, hey, thanks so much for getting me to do a minute that had nothing fucking going on.
45 seconds of black screen to start the podcast.
And I was like, yes, so let's do that sort of again.
Sure.
Because that's what we're going to do. So we're going to kick off, we're going to watch it, and in this new series, for some of you folks who are listening, I'm going to release some video episodes later on as well, sometimes when I'm talking to guests, so you can actually see the screen. But we're gonna watch the minute, we're gonna pause the minute, we're gonna take our time with it, dissect things, talk about it, and then when it's no longer relevant, obviously we'll go off and digress and do what we have to do. But I want you guys to have a listen along while we're doing this. We're gonna have some fun watching this opening sequence, and then we'll go from there. So Stu, let's do this thing.
I'm ready.
Are you liking it so far, the credits?
Oh, it's touching. Some of his best work, actually.
Now, we just had to watch that in all its glory because that's your scene.
Yeah.
So firstly, thank you for coming back.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Rivals the beginning of Heat.
Definitely. As far as the first 45 seconds goes.
That's incredible. It's moving stuff.
It's very moving. So first, let's have the chat.
Sure.
I'm going to say a couple of things about this scene and then we can you know, take it a little bit further as you go. Because I know you're familiar with the text, at least in the other movie, but I'm going to just quickly, there's a couple of key things I want to point out to a couple of folk here. They're going to be listening to it as we're talking over it. So right now we're about 19 seconds in as I'm hearing it. You guys are going to be hearing this play under. This particular scene is something that really strikes me as it's coming up. So we're still playing. It's 29 seconds now, 30 seconds. So as we hear, as we hear this come in, this actual moment that's shot in sort of more low definition grizzly video is essentially the POV of the killer. And so we see looking what looks like the top of a car, or at least the bonnet of a car, and then up these stairs, these freaking stairs. We've got shoes. We've got a little cute penguin here adorably, but it's going up these stairs with a torch, and there's an ominousness that's coming in. So we're observing through this like low definition video lens that is the way that this killer sees the world, and then on this sleeping family. And it takes probably longer, I would say, than I would expect for a wife who's got a torch blazing on her to wake up.
Yeah, unless she expected the kids to come in and wake her up.
Wake her up in some fashion. But this is the opening that then reveals our beautiful neon green Manhunter. This is a theatrical cut. This is like a minute, 16, 17 seconds. The torch is sort of seeing if the husband's moving. And as the wife does, the torch just holds firm, focusing on her, lighting her up. And I have rarely seen, especially because of how it pays off later in the film, I've rarely seen something that's so creepily evocative at the beginning, because we obviously later in the film see the carnage, right? And so I think this little mini thesis at the beginning of this thing is so fantastic, because for me it really like touches something that's so scary, like a home invasion. You know, someone like with your background, like knows how fucking scary and awful they are. And from a real life perspective, as well as a cinematic perspective. And that's what just really gets me at the beginning of this movie in such a way, because there's no flash in it. The way we're introduced to it is not a very flashy, gruesome. It's much more ominous, and not actually seeing the events unfold, I think make it that much scarier for me as the film goes on.
Yeah, and I think there's an efficiency to it as well. I mean, man, around this time, he's still doing his TV work, and it feels like that. Like, how do I draw you in from the opening second?
Yes.
Like, and you, like a lot of times we see it with other, the man does have those like almost dynamic starts to his films.
Collateral is a great one.
Yeah, like the opening, I think we mentioned it during the Heat series, like the opening of The Insider. Like yeah. He just has sort of that movement and that energy going from the opening scenes.
Yeah. He starts the movie with a character with a bag on his head.
Yeah, exactly. But for that reason that you're just automatically, like you hit this, even in this minute, you're like, wow, this person's not meant to be there. They're not expecting them. What's going on? Oh my goodness, this is terror. Inside the house straight away. And yeah. nothing screams terror, I think, as much as like the torchlight going upstairs and especially seeing like the kid's toy.
Yeah.
It's just like that hasn't deterred.
Yes.
That like you haven't sort of seen and gone, oh shit, there's a kid, there are kids here. Let's leave because this isn't right. It's like, no, it's play on.
It's play on. And also the torch, like as you said, there's not even a pause break.
No.
To go, oh, there's kids. It's like, oh, toy, yep.
And it's not frantic. It's not like someone. No, it's not someone breaking in looking for the car keys or for some jewelry or something to steal of value. It's someone just methodically going through, almost sort of like scanning, or like a night security guard would, yes. Like going up the stairs, like
exactly.
Just taking their time. They know they're going. They know they get the house is theirs.
And most of the time, what do you say with those night security guards? Like. Out of sometimes it's like out of 200 walks around a property.
Yeah.
Most of it is completely fucking uneventful.
Yeah.
You just walk around, you put the torch out, you walk past stuff.
I think that's what that looks like. Just that sort of that scanning. It's just taking time, enjoying it, and just staying sort of that eerily in the moment. Which is, if this started with someone.
there's a coach out the back. Yeah, it's like, all right, guys, when you're in there, just, you know, relax, enjoy it. Go out there and enjoy it.
Take it in. Just breathe it in. Get the don't overthink it. Don't overplay your hand.
Don't overplay your hand.
Enjoy the moment, because you may not be back here for a while.
Just
who knows when the next home's going to come along.
Just take it all in.
And just expect the unexpected. Go out there and give it 110%. And he does.
He really does. What we see later is that he really gives it 100%.
He leaves it all on the bed. He leaves it all there.
On the room. Oh, my gosh.
Now, do we address the elephant in the room?
We have to.
So we have something. I think the phrase for Top Gun Maverick was called the legacy sequel.
Yes.
We've seen reboots. We've seen remakes. I think Manhunter is actually the first, historically, in the research I've done, is the first remake.
Wait. You did research?
I did. Because I was trying to find who's done this before, and I don't think it has been done. Maybe Man did it himself with Thief and Heat, but Heat's more of a remake, I think, and there's a lot of DNA crossover between Thief and Heat. But I think Manhunter is actually the first documented remake.
First remake?
Yeah, it's a remake of Brett Ratner's Red Dragon. So
in more ways than one.
He anticipated it, and I don't begrudge him. I don't begrudge him for trying to remake a great film like Red Dragon. Obviously, I rewatched Red Dragon last night.
And I'm glad that in the preparation you watched a movie which I also watched in preparation for this very conversation.
Yeah.
I'm just going to quickly, because I don't know it off the top of my head. Like, I know this premake was made, as you called it, a premake was made in 1986.
Yeah.
So he's pre-made something that was released in 2002.
Yeah, it's a premake.
Yeah.
You make it before the other movie came out.
He pre-made it. Good 16 years in advance. So
anything you see in Red Dragon that you think is derivative of this, it's not. It's just that he got there, like he made it before Red Dragon was going to go on to do it.
Oh, okay, cool. So yeah, keep going.
I don't want you to get lost in the Looper-esque T2 style logic here.
Sure.
Wormholes. It's all manner of things, but it's still a pre-make. As pre-makes go, it would maybe be one of the best.
One of the best.
One of the best pre-makes. Yeah.
Really? Okay.
So, which is high praise, and I don't.
One of the best.
But just while we're here, I could talk, if you want to do a couple of spin-off episodes of Red Dragon.
I don't.
And just pound for pound how that cast destroys this cast. The names. I forget, like, did you not like go, Harvey Keitel's in this?
It's true.
Philip Seymour Hoffman's in this?
It's true. I have to tell you, this is the other thing. And this is, I'm going to speak to you in your language. Yeah. Do you remember the release of Solo?
Yes. Yep.
I think we may have even seen it for the first time together.
Yep.
When Solo was coming out, we'd seen a trailer, and straight away we talk about, you know, I think it was funny. We walked into Twisters and you're like, this movie's starting for me at 4 stars.
Yeah, 4.5. On a pre-watch.
Four and a half star.
Yep.
It can only go bad from here for it. That was the exact same reaction I had with Solo. I was like, this can't go wrong, right? It is Han Solo, Chewbacca, the Millennium Falcon, Lando Calrissian, four things that I love deep into my bones. It's starting at 4 stars, just at a starting point.
Yeah.
And that movie is so bad that at the end of it, like giving it 0.5 star felt like an insult because of how awful it was. It should actually be at a minus. It's one of the first movies that actually should be at a minus. And then it should have got one extra minus star for them going, you know, we're really inspired by Heat. And I was like, I want to kill everyone who's involved with this movie. I want to fight them all. Yeah.
I'm actually glad that period of Hollywood's died where you're like, oh yeah, we're really inspired by this no-name silent film that no one saw and The Manchurian Candidate. Really? This is the sequel to Mary Poppins. Yeah. It's there.
It's there. It's really there. Yeah. And definitely not John Frankenheimer's Manchurian Candidate. Yeah. The Demi one.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Red Dragon, which, let's put it out there, Silence of the Lambs, an amazing movie. I love it to pieces. It's wonderful. Sensational movie. Hannibal takes a swan dive off a pier towards the end. It gets a bit kind of extremely wacky, but its wackiness actually is part of its charm. And I think I've rewatched Hannibal quite a few times. Ridley Scott, great. But I just want to say these four names, I want you to start out. Michael Mann, heard of him.
Heard of him, yep.
Jonathan Demme.
TV director. That's
executive producer of shows like
Miami Vice.
Miami Vice, yep. Crime Story.
Yep.
Jonathan Demme.
Yep.
Ridley Scott.
Mm.
Brett Ratner.
Yeah, well, one of these things does not sound like the other.
Okay, so let's just
Ridley say, Scott has no business.
Let's just say this. So you think about that. Red Dragon is much like Solo. It has Ed Norton, who should be good.
And who is great.
He's awful in Red Dragon. It has Harvey
just
Keitel.
Good as his blonde tips.
It has Harvey Keitel, one of my favorite actors ever. He's awful. He's no Jack Crawford, right? He's not even like Scott Glenn good, right? Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman, who we would both agree, I mean,
inspired.
The most tragic loss that Hollywood has had in like decades, in my opinion.
Yeah, sure. Well, apart from how badly they handled Solo. that was on par with the
death. But Philip Seymour Hoffman, love him. You've got Hopkins coming back. Like, you've got...
tell that he's younger because of the ponytail.
Yeah. He's actually a hipster.
The clip-on ponytail.
I saw a kid like that at Narellan Shops today.
Yeah.
So...
shopping for fava beans.
There's all these great people in it. Ray Fiennes, you know, all these people. And it's even got Dante Spinotti the cinematographer of Manhunter. Yeah. It's even adapted by Ted Talley, who did Silence of the Lambs. It's adapted by him from Michael Mann's original adaption. Like, he just tweaked that script to update it and include basically some of the things that Mann didn't include in his adaptation. In this pre-make. And the movie, like, for me, is near unwatchable.
Really? Like,
I can't, Stu. It's awful.
But it's not that far from this, except stylistically.
But that just shows you, in my opinion, that like style actually, like style is everything. It's like you could have some of these garbage writers and filmmakers like make stuff. And like we've talked about it so frequently together on podcasts and otherwise. It's like it's actually the style is everything, because the style like heightens your emotional engagement with it. It makes things more ambiguous or ambivalent. It creeps into your subconscious. There's not a single shot in Red Dragon that I remember. And in this movie, if we were going through scene by scene, and I have done it for like the first now 30 or 40 minutes as we're recording this, like first 30 or 40 minutes of the show and the series are already recorded, like we're in the bag. There are so many shots, so much style, so much great choices, and all that just, it gets me every time. This is a guy like truly flexing his stylistic ambition in the first way that we really see it. Like, The Keep is kind of failed because they had all these grandiose ideas about like 80 special effects, and then like the one guy who designed it all died like just before they began post-production, which sucks because it's like the great unanswerable question of his career. But it's like, I can't, like, Red Dragon is like one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life, and it's based on one of my favorite books, and it's got one of my favorite cinematographers, and it has some of my favorite actors, and it should just be like, I've heard people say before, like, why can't they just try and remake, like just do a bastardized ripoff of Heat, like once every 10 years, kind of like The Town or Den of Thieves or whatever the case may be. Why can't they do that? And I'm not against it. I just can't believe how bad it is in comparison and contrast to Manhunter. Manhunter for me is like.
Yeah, but that's because I think Manhunter swings in just a wildly different direction. I think Red Dragon actually like is closer to Silence of the Lambs in terms of look. That's what they're going for. I think that's what they're aping.
Yeah, but like.
They still fall well short of that.
Oh, way short.
Well, not I well think- short.
Dang.
Just short of the line.
Just reanimated the corpse of Jonathan Demme. Folks, can you check your Twitter feeds right now? If it says Jonathan Demme is trending.
It was here. He's up, he's angry, and he's tweeting at me.
I like, for me, it's unfathomable. That take as, and look, you're not, what's devastating to me is like two of my closest friends. You and Maria Lewis.
We agree on about three things a year. And each year.
I was going to say three things every 10 years.
No. There's about three things a year where we like cross paths. The rest of the time we're warring at every other intersection. And rightly so.
Yeah.
And
it's befitting of your friendship.
Yeah. And that's how it works. But on those sweet spots where we do, it sort of revitalizes for the next fight when we're going to go at each other. And they're like, Which, no, it is very interesting.
But I don't know. I put it on last night and I'm like, I don't know why it's so stupidly watchable. But then again, that's Brett Ratner. He makes just dumb, stupidly watchable things.
Yes.
Like it's easy. It feels closer to like, it's like a movie that, you know, when we used to talk about like movies you'd watch on just on the airplane.
Yes.
On airplane. That it's a airplane flight movie.
Or a Sunday afternoon matinee that used to start in Australia at like 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And you never started it at four.
No.
It was like 20 past five.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is on.
Yeah. And like the footy shit I'm putting on yeah. Red Dragon.
Your team is playing like dog's balls. Yeah. And you go, oh, I'm going to change.
Manhunter is an event. It's event screening.
Yes.
That's prime. That's the thing I want to sit down and consume.
Yeah.
But annoyingly can't be found anywhere.
On streaming.
On any streaming or physical, it's very hard.
It's a very hard
thing to track down, which is frustrating.
Yeah, it is frustrating. And even more frustrating. Do you want me to get, this is the next level of frustrating. There exists, Stu, a 70mm print, personal print of Michael Mann's director's cut of Manhunter that the American Cinematheque, beautiful organization, has been screening at. Like at their, usually the Egyptian, because that's their main 70mm screen thing. They've done it twice in the last year. First time around, my dearest friends, you know, Jordan Harper, Katie Walsh, Travis Woods, all of which folks you're going to hear on this, they sent me like apologetic kind of funereal text going, just going like, Blake, that was a religious experience. Yeah, and I'm so sorry.
Like when you run into one of your mate's exes in a pub and you have a few drinks, you're like, I didn't mean to. Like we were just catching up and then we end up having a really fun night. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Well, we weren't meant to. I'm so sorry.
And they went, so they've seen it. So it there's another potential that in the future that hopefully a Michael Mann, you know, a private, perfectly curated, a personalized version of that movie exists and maybe people will want to watch it. Seems to be kicking goals in LA. But yeah, I agree. Like it is harder to get. But I did the thing. I tried really hard to try and watch Red Dragon and go. I tried.
In fairness, I would have liked to have watched. We've watched hundreds of movies together. Hundreds. And I would have liked to be here, maybe to watch you under observation. I'd even go like behind the double side of glass just so I have an independent way of seeing how you watch the movie. Because I know you would have been scoffing and you would have been rolling your eyes and I don't think you would have given it a fair go. I would have liked to be there with a little shock button for when you were like not watching it properly.
I watched Silence of the Lambs first.
Because that's a bit unfair. That is
probably even crueler than watching Manhunter and Dragon back to back. But I just so happened to watch Silence of the Lambs because, you know, doing a show
I fell over and it was on.
Doing a show.
The 4K just was on I couldn't help it.
Doing a show about Manhunter is impossible to not like watch Silence of the Lambs. I even ordered the, this is how tragic I am. I ordered the 4K. There's a 4K Arrow version from the UK. I bought that and then I didn't realize that this print of this special edition is not shipping until the 26th of August.
Okay.
So then I just went on to, I think it was like our local streaming service, Stan, had Silence of the Lambs or one of those. And I was like, all right, I got to watch Silence of the Lambs again. So I watched that. And then I watched it and I was like, okay, I'm going to just try and fire up Red Dragon. Maybe Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal. Maybe I can, you know, just have that taste and I can go back and I can watch this. And I watched it and I stayed up and I was watching it and I was like,
stayed up. What time were you watching it?
I think I started it. So I watched Silence of the Lambs. Like I watched Silence of the Lambs in a weird, like two part way. Like I watched it kind of like the previous night. And so I started watching Red Dragon about 9:30. I think I sat up to like 11:30.
That's not fair.
Why?
I was on the couch by myself.
It was like a Wednesday night.
That's not fair. That's not giving it your proper attention. That's a slight. That's a slight.
It needs an earlier session.
Well, I think in fairness, like you could have come in here into the One Heat studio, popped it on at maybe like 6:30, 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, and that would have been. That would have been more appropriate. I think
in the last 2 days in One Heat Ministry years where we're actually watching this together right now, I've fired up, talk about a double, fired up Jaws on 4K. Oof. which was fucking divine, firstly, and like maybe the best movie ever made.
It's just in the conversation.
In the conversation. Yeah. And then I watched The Conversation.
Yeah.
And so, and today, so I've watched Jaws and The Conversation back to back. It's a hard.
It's hard pantheon.
Whatever's next after those.
Yeah.
Like I remember it was the same thing when we went and saw Tenet, you know, like we saw Tenet in the big screen.
Yep.
But in the preceding 3 weeks, you and I had seen 2001 A Space Odyssey, Jaws on the big screen, Heat on the big screen,
yep.
Predator on the big screen in 4K, all these, like I was 70 millimeter 2001 Space Odyssey. And then I saw Tenet and I go, it's fine.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, I'm like, yeah, it's fine. But also I have to be really candid. The previous 5 weeks I'd seen maybe five of the best movies ever and two or three of my personal favorite movies of all time.
Well, I'm just glad that Red Dragon is in that run. That it didn't like drop the baton like from
from
Red Dragon to Jaws to The Conversation. That seems like, you know, whatever's going to bring home that relay. Maybe Silence of the Lambs is it. That gets a medal in any relay. Like, you know, loses a bit of
steam. Speaking of the Olympics, that's like going like Klim to Thorpe to Eric the Eel.
Yeah.
It really hits. It falls off a fucking cliff, shoot.
It's so fun and dumb, but of an era. But I am excited to finally get back in and have a crack at Manhunter over the next proceeding while. And hopefully, I'd imagine one of our local cinemas are probably due to put this on. Probably.
I'm gonna harass. There's a. Let's just say I'll tell you off air. I know a great contact who is an absolute manhead who is currently working in a wonderful establishment in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to pester them incessantly, hopefully to do this somewhere. Yep. So we can see it on a big screen in Australia. And I think some manheads will get out for it. So
I think so. I think if they did a double bill, I think if they threw this and Heat as a way to get people back out. Cause I mean, Heat's screening basically once a year.
Can I say this? I would even like, and I know it might be sacrosanct for some folk, but what about a Manhunter and then Silence of the Lambs?
Well, if you can't get Red Dragon, probably not too many prints left.
All the prints were burnt.
they rounded them up. I think it was the Great Purge of 2008.
It was like the Great Purge of Brett Ratner's entire filmography. Yeah,
it's like, I don't think he actually would have heard against it. Brett Ratner was probably leading the charge.
Listen, Rush Hour, look, we can say this. Rush Hour is great. Rush Hour 2 is great. Rush Hour 3 kind of falls off a cliff. Money Talks, I'm a big fan of, actually. It's like it's one of his weird first movies. It's just Chris Tucker on absolute fire led him into the Rush Hour franchise. There's really not that much more Brett Ratner does.
I think it's summed up. Brett Ratner's career was summed up by the fact that he took a gig convincing other filmmakers to include the Nintendo Wii in their films, to have characters playing the Wii. That's what a gig he took as like a sort of a lobbyist for Nintendo. So for a while there, you had like people playing, like doing the bowling or the tennis or the Wii Sports. And I was like, that was led by Brett Ratner. That about sums up his cinematic
his legacy.
Yeah.
His legacy.
But I'm really excited to see where you go with this series. I was with Heat and I'm excited to hear the far better guess that precede me, but I just enjoy that we don't even know yet what you're going to uncover and the conversations that you're going to uncover. That for me is the joy of where these can go, because they're going to go to some really special places, as they like, not to say this isn't a special place, but they're going to go to some great places. And I think the process of discovery and the scrutiny, it always shakes free those beautiful gems.
And what I would say is if you have a little bit of extra scratch on One Heat Minute Productions Patreon, as many of these as I can, I want you guys to see and feel it like we are doing it. We are doing it Roger Ebert Cinema Interruptor style. We are watching the minutes. We're unpacking it. We're winding it back. We're looking at it. We're talking about individual shots. Hopefully it's a really awesome audio journey. And if you're listening to this and you want to dig in, I will try and put them up around the same times as the release of the episodes. I'm just working on trying to make the visuals a little bit cooler, clip some of the things into there and out of there. But hopefully you can see it because, man, recording this and the first early episodes that we've done of the series, I'm having that exact experience. So it's a bit of a revelation. It's kind of like a, you know, while you watch something like Thief and it's like, oh, that is like such a perfect realistic impression of Chicago. And you see Michael Mann's, you know, I think some people called it like neon, you know, I think great author S.A. Cosby, who we both really love. And I know personally coined the phrase neon noir. He's like, that's Michael Mann's first kind of neon noir film. Digging into this and seeing his style, it's like, oh, like the stuff that we saw with Heat and Thief and why they feel so grounded in reality. And then the stuff you see later with like Vice and Public Enemies and like stylistically where he takes stuff. It's like Manhunter becomes like this really key touchstone text that just shows him taking a fantastic pulp novel, trying to stay pretty damn faithful to like so much of the core of the novel, but also then expressing it in this like unbelievably unique way. So it's so great. I've had such a fun time, and you're going to hear how much fun we're having on the episodes, almost as much fun as it is talking to you.
Almost.
It's probably not, because the Shukut Get Back Coach hot one hot take in the middle of another series is exactly why you're here, mate. So look, thank you so much. This is a shorter episode. We've got longer minutes to do. I'm not going to make you agonize over the typeface here, but thank you so much for being a part of the first episode and kicking it off. And then hopefully everyone who's listening is going to have a great time. And I'm not going to, just knowing that folks are here for Manhunter, I'm not going to make you watch the opening of Red Dragon to contrast it. Maybe if by popular demand people like tweet at me and say, make Stu go through the opening of Red Dragon, we can try that until it says the words Red Dragon.
My pleasure. If you want to, I'll do that for anyone. If someone, the amount of people, just on that note, the amount of people that hit me up when I posted last night that I was watching this, the DMs were overflowing with support. Underwatched, underappreciated. I love this movie. So the Red Dragon Hive, they're hidden, but they're strong.
Much like the dragon himself.
And to all of you, you're sick.
Yeah.
You're sick.
Please
people.
Stop watching. Please stop listening to
please
this show.
Stay in the hive. Stay out of this. This is not a show for you. Stu, thank you. You're a legend. Thanks
My
for
pleasure.
Doing this,
mate.
This has been an episode of Manhunter, the latest Michael Mann deep dive at One Heat Minute Productions. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to check out other deep dive series we've done on Michael Mann, go over to oneheatminute.com. You can find links to all of our previous shows, including One Heat Minute, The Last 12 Minutes of the Mohicans, Miami Nice, featuring Katie Walsh and I, and all modern man movies, including Collateral, Ferrari, Black Hat, you name it, it is there. And the Jimmy Kahn Eulogy, One Thief Minute. Plenty of shows over there. If you want to support everything that we do, we'd greatly appreciate it if you checked out our Patreon / One Heat Minute. Over there, you can see weekly new releases. One Hot Take is the show there. You can also see The Decade Project, where we look back 10 years on the films that are still hanging around, currently working through 2014. They'll be on the main feed at the end of the year. But if you are a patron for as little as a dollar a month, you're getting them all throughout the year. And most importantly, as this is a Manhunter episode, Manhunter video podcasts will be popping up. Not every single episode, but most episodes will pop up as a video podcast as a drop there. So you can watch and consume and see all of the frames and images that we're talking about in all of these episodes. Every little bit of your support helps. So sharing, talking to us online at OHM Pods or for myself at One Blake Minute on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks so much for listening.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.